Insurance agents from around the world, welcome to the Insurance Guys Podcast. My name is Scott Howell, your fearless host and leader, insurance agency owner and insurance evangelist for I Protect Insurance and Financial Services, based out of Huntsville, Alabama. And before we get started on today's episode, please help me welcome. He is a 6'3" sophomore from Mobile, Alabama. Parade first team All-American, Rivals 5-star recruit. He is a fantastic insurance agent and a great American. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and welcome the incomparable Mr. Bradley Flowers. How are you, Bradley?
Great, Scott. How are you?
Best I've ever been, Bradley. Think we got something we need to talk about today.
Okay.
You know what it is?
No, I'm not sure.
Mr. Shane Gillis.
Okay.
Hosts SNL Saturday Night Live last Saturday. One of the skits that did not make the show, but was so funny that SNL released it.
Did that not make the show?
It did not make the show. The Liberty Bibbity.
Yeah.
Liberty Mutual.
Are we going to tell the story?
We are going to finally tell the story. And if you're on Twitter, you probably saw it. But Bradley and I need to tell the story of what happened, because when I saw the emu shoot the guy on the couch, I mean, the whole skit.
What they did such a good job about is it looks like it could be a real Liberty Mutual commercial.
Okay, before we tell the story, how on God's earth do they not get sued for that?
I'm sure they will. I don't know. It may be one of those things like they can be sued for it, but Liberty knows the backlash from that will be worse than just having it out there. I think they actually poked fun at it. I think Liberty actually shared it, or I think I saw something like that.
Well, they say that all publicity is good publicity, and I think
almost all publicity.
I think the reason that they can't be sued for that, some attorney out there will probably reach out to me and tell me I'm wrong. But I believe if you do a parody that's so over the top.
Yeah, that there's no chance it's real.
It's you know what I'm saying? Like, and of course, that parody of the Liberty Mutual commercial was so over the top that I can't see that any rational human being would go, oh my gosh, that's a Liberty Mutual commercial. Although it did look exactly like a Liberty Mutual commercial from the aesthetic side of the house. Mm-hmm. You know, he was dressed up just like the guy in the emu. So I think it's time that we tell the story. So approximately 3 years ago, Bradley and I get hired to go speak at a fireside chat in Chattanooga, Tennessee, for the Young Agents Conference of Tennessee. I show up that night.
It was the first one we ever did.
And I remember it distinctly because as I'm driving, because, you know, Chattanooga from my house is only about an hour and a half. Now, you lose an hour because Chattanooga's on Eastern time zone.
So it's really 30 minutes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I guess if you want to look at it that way, kind of the leap year way. But the reason I remember it so well, if you remember, Bradley, when we checked in that night, if I'm not mistaken, Alabama was playing Tennessee in football that night. That Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And the talk that we were giving was a fireside chat. Now, one of the reasons I remember the fireside chat was that was the first time, the first speech or talk that we ever gave together. That was also the time that the lady walked up to us right before we were going on stage and she goes, Bradley, I love you. I'm telling you, you are just so great. I don't like him at all, but I love you. You are so good at what you do. Now, him, I can't stand him. I don't like you.
And at that moment, they're like, ladies and gentlemen,
Scott Howell and Bradley Fly.
I forgot about that.
And I said something to the effect of, I really appreciate that. Thank you. Anyway, towards the end of our, hour and a half, we were up there kind of sitting in chairs.
About 100 people or so.
And so we start doing this question and answer session. And somebody asked the question about, I don't remember what it was exactly, but I go on this, you know, pulpit preaching, get up on my stump and start talking about how I think that we have finally reached the lowest common denominator of insurance commercials, these stupid ass commercials where the guy's juggling the chainsaws for Geico and the stupid ass progress. the Progressive commercials that for so many years had the bumbling idiot two insurance agents with the yellow jackets on, and yet nearly 50% of their business is written by insurance agents. And then finally I said, as I'm getting on towards the end of my dissertation about how stupid these television commercials are about a very serious topic, and that the only reason that these insurance carriers are doing that is that some focus group, marketing group somewhere has decided, well, how do we get eyeballs on the television to watch an insurance commercial? Because really, nobody cares about insurance unless they have to buy it, or they've got a billing question, or they have a claim. And then I get on this thing where I start in on Liberty Mutual. And I said, what the hell is a damn emu? Does anybody here know what a freaking emu is anyway?
And you went on a tear.
Why do they have that stupid ass bird on a Liberty Mutual commercial?
I think that's exactly what you said.
Why are we even talking about emus as it relates to a very important topic of insurance and how it can affect your entire life and, you know, protecting people's property? And I'm just going on and on about how stupid they are and how this stupid commercial and emus, and nobody wants to watch this shit anyway. Brad, I'll let you finish.
And then that's the very end of the presentation. And people applauded and laughed. And the MC of the event walks up and he goes, we would like to thank the sponsor of this segment, Liberty Mutual Insurance. And I found out later.
Oops.
I found out later from my Liberty Mutual rep, who was also the rep for Tennessee,
right,
that in the back of the room, they had emu sunglasses that they were going to hand out to each attendee as they walked out of the room, and they boxed them up as you started the rant.
Man, I didn't mean to mess up nobody's program.
Yeah, you just got to take the good with the bad.
I mean,
I do this now, though, when I go to speak somewhere, because part of my shtick is I kind of make fun of some of the vendors. And, there's no better joke than an industry-specific inside joke.
100%.
And like my go-to joke now is, hey, we're Safeco Agency for the Future 2019. That does not prevent them from declining 98% of what we put to them right now. And that one goes over swimmingly, and my Safeco rep was in the room the last time I gave it. But but I always glance at the sponsors
right
before I walk through the vendor hall, because I'm like, I don't want to,
So what you just said, if you listen to, you know, world-class comedians, they will tell you, I do not do
corporate events.
And I think what you just said is one reason they don't is they can't tell jokes like what you just told, because they don't know.
We did One City World Tour in Austin last year, and we were trying to get Joe Rogan, because the original venue we had for that, he was actually performing at that night.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, look, he goes on stage at 7.
Right.
Our deal's going to end at 5. Just have him come a couple hours early and do a podcast. Could you imagine how freaking cool that would be? Like,
we've done a lot.
You and I get up there on stage to, well, wait a minute, we need a guest. Joe Rogan walks out, and they were like, yeah, he doesn't do corporate events at all. Sorry, he's not interested.
Right.
I'm like, please look at this one video of my co-host yelling into the microphone and then tell him to make his mind up. But anyway.
So when we were looking at venues for the One City World Tour, Bradley calls me one day and he goes, hey, man, I've been on the phone this afternoon with, I guess, the guy that I believe you told me, correct me if I'm wrong, was going to be the new general manager of the mothership, which is now his.
Yeah. He manages both properties.
Wow.
And that is the guy, because I've heard Joe reference him on the podcast.
Right. Right.
I can't
call him by his first name,
Nick or something like that. But,
He
was, he gave me some intel on that call that wasn't public yet. That was interesting to see play out, but regardless of whether anybody listening likes Joe Rogan or not, he's probably the most influential media figure in the country or in the world right now.
100%. So guys, very special guest today. I am so excited to have him on this podcast. As I start every episode, our mission on this podcast never changes. It's to help you agents any way we can. I believe I got a guy on here today that can do that for us. So without further ado, I want to give him the introduction that he's always deserved. And I am going to do that while a steel weed eater blower is blowing at 7,000 miles per hour, 4 feet from me. So this should be an indication of just how damn good I am at podcasting. Ladies and gentlemen, he is originally from Notice, Idaho, and he currently resides in Star, Idaho. He is a graduate of LCSC, and he began his insurance career in a small Idaho town of 800 people in 2004 with no insurance experience. He acquired three more small agencies within a two-year period and spent the next 5 years trying to figure out how to love his job and not quit. He started the process of radically changing his company for growth in 2011. And I can promise you, Bradley, there's a whole bunch of agents that just turned the radio up when I said that.
Mm-hmm.
As of today, he has completed more than 20 mergers and acquisitions, and he now loves his job and career and has unlimited vision of growth for the future with the framework to support it. He is currently the president of FIG Insurance. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my profound honor today to introduce to you first-time guest on the IGP, but it will not be his last. Ladies and gentlemen, I give to you Mr. Jason Hansen. How are you, Jason?
Doing good. Thank you for that introduction. That was warmer than I thought it was going
to
be.
Well, it's so glad to have you here today. As you heard me say, our mission on this podcast never changes. We are here for one reason and one reason only, to do what for 758 years, but all the way back to when Jesus walked on earth, no insurance agent ever wanted to give up the secret sauce. The advice you heard before this podcast was things like, just call people, open up the phone book. I don't know. I don't know how we got to $50 million. It just happened. So our mission today, help these insurance agents. And I know we've got a lot of questions for you, but before we do, go back in my DeLorean for just a moment. Go back in time. Talk a little bit about how you got in the business and kind of bring us up to today.
Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to mention before I forgot, because I'm getting old, I'm actually will be speaking at the Hawksoft conference on this very topic. I didn't realize you guys were Hawksoft folks as well. So
yeah, I'll be there as well. I look forward to seeing
you. Nice to meet you guys. Yeah. So 2004, 2003, playing college basketball, married with one child and one on the way, and had a gentleman asked me if I wanted to get into insurance. And I was working on a pre-law degree and was going to go be an attorney. Got down to that point. My wife said, you know what? I don't really want you to go into the legal world. Let's look at the insurance thing. And my pride got in the way. And I just thought insurance agent and used car salesman are synonymous. And it's just not my, it's beneath me. And gosh, what a rude awakening. It took me a little while to figure out this was the right path. Even after I was in this path, there were multiple times I was ready to quit. I actually applied for other jobs, found myself in a kind of a pickle of a situation. You know, when you get into your business and you feel like you're pretty important in your business, and if you're not there, the company's not going to run the way it's supposed to. That's where I was at. I just felt like I was needed in the company. I was too important, and I was managing a bunch of people, hardly making any money, and constantly frustrated with the work that I was doing. I had a medical situation with one of our children, and I didn't work or take a phone call for over 2 months, and got the realization and the epiphany that I'm not nearly as important as I thought I was. And the company ran absolutely fine without me there, and probably ran smoother without me there. And that was the beginning of a radical change within the company.
And so you come back from, let's call it medical leave, because that's kind of, I mean, you know, your kid gets sick, decisions have to be made relative to the importance of your life and your child's life. And you know, you turn the phone off, you walk away for 2 months, you come back and you go, wait a minute, hold on a second. It ran well. I wasn't around, probably not needed as much as I thought I was. And then what happens next? Is that when you start putting the playbook together to start purchasing insurance agencies to kind of supercharge your growth? Is that kind of what happened?
So You know, I was a guy coming with no insurance experience, just kind of got lucky and found a small agency for sale. So bought the agency. I didn't really know any other way. And so over that next year and a half, I purchased three more agencies. They were all small agencies, but
they add up. I mean, it adds up, right?
They absolutely add up. And kind of my philosophy today is people spend tons of dollars on marketing, you know, and they're marketing one policy at a time. I have never spent a dime on marketing in almost 20 years. All of my money has been buying business at, you know, large quantities at a time. And for me, I just have felt it has been the path for me. I'm not a marketer. Don't know what I'm doing there. I'm probably missing out on a ton of opportunity. But going back to answer your question, it was after that time where coming to that realization that I just wasn't as important as I thought I was, I realized in order for us to continue growth, I needed to remove myself from the day-to-day activities going forward. Because as soon as I got back in the office, the workload came right back. All of the people that normally wanted to visit with me came right back in to visit with me. So what I did is I put a wall up where my office is and had no windows, and nobody knew if I was there or not. Told the CSR, all right, you know, you're handling this from here on out. You know, whether I'm here or not, I'm not here. And things started to change. You know, I was able to go from managing people and then go back. I was managing offices and managing people, and I changed that philosophy to agency partners. So essentially, I turned all of those managerial roles over to individuals within the offices and made them partners, and took all of that load off of my desk because I couldn't do everything at once. So doing those things made it so, I haven't written an insurance policy since 2010.
For those of you listening, that is one of the best strategies you can do in your agency to A, find out where the bottlenecks are in your company as they relate to you, but also what you can outsource or delegate that you're not even aware of, is to take a leave. And especially if you know you're going to take it. I took a 2-month leave in 2021. And it's interesting, the weeks leading up to that, how your brain starts working in a different way where you're like, wait a minute, if I'm not here, who's going to do this thing? So you start building processes around the things that only you do. For example, one example is for us was payroll. You know, I was always the one that calculated commissions and then sent the totals to the bookkeeper. And so we had to build a process around, okay, I'm going to teach her how to do that, pay her a little bit more per month to go into the management system, pull the commissions. And then all she does now is text me a total to make sure I have the money in the bank account and we're good. But then what breaks when you're gone? Okay, now we need to fix that. And then the catch is the things that you outsource or that you delegate for while you are gone, when you come back, you don't take those things back over. You've just essentially replaced yourself in your company. And then a couple of years go by, you can do it again because there's going to be other things that you pick up that are maybe higher level tasks that you pick up in the meantime.
I was going to say, Bradley, one of the big challenges mentally for people is, especially agency owners, they're typically the number one bottleneck in the company. They can't give up opportunity. There's an aspect of control and finances that they just really struggle with. And I mean, part of it is there's a trust factor. It's huge. Another part of it is just the inability to think outside themselves. And it's not a knock, because I think we all go through that. It took me more of an accident for it to happen to myself. Some people are smart enough to figure it out on their own, and people like me, you know, it gets forced on them. But when the opportunity happens, you have to be willing to make the change if that's what you want to accomplish.
Yeah.
So what did you, and I'm going to have to let Brad, I'm going to have to lean on Bradley a little bit here. I don't like to talk about things I've never done before. Okay. I've never purchased an insurance agency. So for me to sit here and try to have an intelligent conversation about purchasing an insurance agency is just not in my wheelhouse. But Bradley, bullish on acquisition, just purchased an agency that's doubled the size of his agency back around December 29th. So I'll let him interject here a lot more than I am, but talk a little bit about you know, getting into that and getting started and it looks to me like you've kind of picked up steam there. You've acquired, you know, I believe more than 20 mergers and acquisitions. So, you know, you start in 04, you don't have any insurance experience, but like everything in life, no matter whether it's riding a bicycle or driving a car or hitting a baseball, it doesn't matter. The more you do it, the better you get at it. And I have a sneaky suspicion that's kind of what happened with you. You removed yourself from the agency, and now you're able to focus your attention on getting great at purchase and acquisition. Talk a little bit about that.
So I appreciate that. And I think it's important to hear questions from your side as well, because there's an aspect of I've already done it. And then there's an aspect of I don't know what I'm supposed to even start with.
Right.
How do I get to that point? So the one thing that was really maybe a hard learning curve was not knowing what I didn't know. So for example, my infrastructure was not there to acquire an agency. I had no infrastructure. And when you acquire an agency without an infrastructure, you realize where you lack, because it just gets magnified in a big way. You know, you take a culture of non-culture into an acquisition, and all of a sudden you've got another non-culture coming in, and it becomes
a
nightmare.
It can really shake things up.
Absolutely.
I think Bradley's in the middle of that right now. I'm speak for you, but it's just a process you have to go through.
Yeah. And so, you know, going through multiple acquisitions still without really having an infrastructure and a culture in place. Again, I didn't know any different. So nobody ever told me, hey, you shouldn't do it this way. I just kept doing it. Well, eventually you get to that point where I was ready to quit. You know, I was still acquiring, but I was just ready to quit because I didn't have that infrastructure in place. And it wasn't until, I had the idea, the brainchild was there, but I didn't have the right people in place to create the infrastructure that was necessary. And so it wasn't until my current partner came into the mix, which he started helping around 2013 or so.
Mm-hmm. And he has 9 kids. He can make anything work.
Yeah, they know by the way, they know what causes that. I don't know if any of y'all know that or not, but they have figured out exactly what causes that. But go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. 8 daughters, by the way. 8 daughters and 1 son.
That's the problem. They kept trying for a boy.
Mm. Awesome family. Anyway, he is an accountant, and he's actually a high-level accountant that has an interesting background in and of itself. But his ability to create that infrastructure on the financial side, on the tracking side, he's built programs for each of our agencies. He's built a program for us. All of our valuation programs have been built from him. It now allows us to be streamlined and to go acquire and just add things in. I mean, we have a culture. We have a foundation of exactly what we look for. How it's implemented, the questions that we go through to ask. For example, January 2nd of this year, we had an acquisition and 2 mergers all on the same day.
Wow.
It was a lot to take in. We've never done that before without the infrastructure in place. From years of experience, I don't think we would have handled things so well. But it's up and running awesomely, and we're super grateful for it.
So the number one question I get, and we've been trying to aggressively acquire for the last 3 years. I did two small ones previously, one on the captive side, one on the independent side. Neither one of those involved employees or locations or anything like that. You know, adding employees in a separate location, that's 10 times harder, if not more. And then probably have looked at 50 deals in the last two and a half years. We had one that fell through in 2022, the day before closing. And then we just had this one that came through, and I have an outstanding LOI right now that I'm waiting to hear back from. But the number one question I get is, how do you find them? What's your, you know, some people like, you know, Chris Paradiso says, just pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, if you ever want to sell, call me. I'm like, that's not exactly my style. But how do you guys find them? Is it more just the fact that you've acquired, you've gained a reputation in the local market, or are you going outside the local market? What's the strategy there?
So I think that comes back to some of the culture and the infrastructure. So originally it was just me going in and presenting myself. For example, One took us 16 years for the first introduction. And
nope,
the...
not doing that. But hey, by the way, I hate to interrupt. My style is I like to pick up the phone. That's step one. And I typically like to call the gatekeeper and get in a cuss fight with her before I have an opportunity to talk to the agency owner. Seems to work out
that
real well.
That did happen
for
one
me.
Time, right?
So, yeah, 100%, like 6 months ago. Great strategy, by the way, guys. If you want to buy an agency, get in a cuss fight with a girl that answers the phone, that'll put you a couple of steps.
Does she know she's talking to her future boss, maybe?
Hell no. She didn't know who I was. Because I wouldn't tell her. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm calling to you remember this story.
Oh, yeah. I heard the phone call.
Specifically, what do you want to talk about? Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was laughing at your acquisition spill.
It's my strategy.
That was awesome. I love it. I'm going to try it next time.
Yeah, it's the main reason I have zero acquisitions under my belt right now.
Well, just in regards to our structure, so because we have that culture of acquisition, so we have the corporate side. I mean, this is just our style. So everybody's going to create their own. Bradley, yours is going to be different than ours. But we have our corporate company, and the corporate company owns all of the business, but we partner in the revenue, and we do that for specific reasons. One is carrier driven. We had some carriers threaten us that we needed to change our structure, which worked out fine. It was the same concept, just different terms. But because we have that acquisition driven model, we now have our agency partners that also are looking for acquisitions. So as typically it's just been me going out and trying to meet whoever I can.
Yeah. Put that bug in your ear.
Absolutely. But at the end of last year, one of our locations purchased an agency, purchased it, and it came under our company. We didn't have to do anything. It was awesome. We grew overnight, by whatever, $1.5 million in premium without having to do anything. So there's different strategies in different ways. No, we're not just in the local market. I've got offices in Montana and Nevada looking, at other places. We've kind of got somewhat of an LOI, kind of an LOI with another large agency in the East. Just waiting on that person to pull the trigger. But some of these things take a really, really long time of fostering and nurturing. And you just never know when somebody's going to come back and say, okay, I'm ready. And we've had numerous experiences like that.
So what was there about the original model that made the carriers push back?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll tell you, the carrier was auto owners.
I figured that.
Yeah. We have a very, very large auto owners book. And it was quite a few years ago. And there was another company, and I won't mention them, but they got terminated by auto owners because of their contract. It's an aggregator. Auto owners doesn't do aggregators, and they gave us the reasons why. So within our original contract, we had a split. It was a 50-50 ownership in the book of business with our agency partners.
So agency partner being the agency owner of the agency you purchased, or is this somebody that is your partner already and they're over the agency you purchased?
It can be both.
Okay.
Yeah, it can be both. So like in each of our locations, we'll have at least 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe agency partners, and then they'll hire their own staff.
And are they actual partners in the business, or is it some sort of ghost equity?
They're partners in their book.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so essentially they're glorified producers with ownership in their book.
Okay.
And it's ownership in the revenue of their book. So beforehand, it was ownership in the book, and the carrier came back and said, if you don't change this, we will terminate you.
Because that's more like an aggregator model. Yeah.
Yeah. And they said they have been in numerous lawsuits with partners splitting up and who gets what book, who gets what portion of the book. And so they've been in lawsuits and they don't want to deal with that. So made sense. We made the change, and we have since found there are other carriers that also had problems with that type of a model. So our current model today, with being a single agency, having a single agency with multiple locations, allows us to go after any carrier. The strength behind it is fantastic. One of the things that you were talking about, Bradley, was the staffing issue within the agency. So because you have your location and then you acquired an agency and you're trying to deal with managing people, we took that off of our plate and said, we're bringing an agency partner and they're going to hire their own staff and they're going to take on the responsibility of the agency. We'll do the back end work. They'll make the bulk of the money. They'll earn what they get, and they have the responsibility of bringing in that staff. So for us, it's been a win-win situation.
So the interesting thing is the hardest part, I think, of an acquisition involving people is getting the people to meld, getting them used to your processes, culturally, expectations, because no matter what you think on the front end, like when I met with the five people that we took on back in November, you know, I said some things that I thought were true. And then once we got in there, I was like, oh, we're not going to be able to do this way. And so, and one of them pointed that out to me the other day, like, you know, you said this, but that's not how it was. And I was like, well, yeah, because once we got in there, we realized we were not going to be able to do this thing this way. And it's funny. So the five people that, so there was nine people at this location, you know, unfortunately the agency owner kicked the can down the road in regards to some inner office issues, hiring, firing, that sort of thing. And unfortunately, when you go through an acquisition, some of those decisions have to be made very quickly. So of the nine, we kept five. And I told them all last week, I was like, the thing I'm most proud of is I would hire all five of you people if you came to me with an interview. Like, that's a good situation. So as good as that is, we're still having issues getting everybody sort of to feel like they're on our team on both sides. I think you have to go out of your way. You know, it's not this office and this office. It's not us and them. It's all of us together, in my opinion.
I think part of the challenge, because, you know, having gone through this, I think part of the challenge is not having leadership present.
Yeah.
You know, someone that is can just quickly respond to them, because being at a distance, you feel like you're an afterthought as an employee.
Yeah.
You know, you love to have employees that are just go-getters. They want to do, you know, they don't need to be told what to do. They know what their job is. They're going to go get it done. Mm-hmm. That's what we look for in agency partners. But a lot of employees, they want to, you know, they want to be micromanaged, kind of. No, yeah. They don't, but they do.
They don't want to say they do, but a lot of times yes. They need that.
Yeah. And so if you don't have leadership present, it's a challenge.
Yeah. You know,
because you're asking them to adopt a culture that nobody can give an example of where they're present.
So what's your post-acquisition strategy? So I'll tell you a funny story. So this agency that we purchased was operated off Excel spreadsheets. They had no processes, no systems. The only process was, hey, we're just going to overhire and throw payroll at the problem. No technology. And that forced us to have to change a lot of things in that agency. And Kenneth, my director of operations here, who's sort of along with Natasha leading the acquisition, he and I went over there. The office is about an hour and 10 minutes from me. We're on our way back like 2 or 3 days in, and we're both just exhausted. I mean, we made it from Gulf Shores to I-10 without speaking, which is about 35 minutes. And he said, does this always go like this? And I said, well, not really, but I mean, there's always going to be issues, but you know, normally, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong here, normally what you would do is you would leave the agency operating as it is, and then slowly over a 2-year period, migrate things over and change things. We're doing that in 2 months. You know, that's your PCFs, your Acrisures. That's typically how they do it, in my opinion, is they buy an agency. It basically stays the same for a little while, and then things are slowly moved over. What's your strategy with that? And it may depend some on the agency size, but what's your strategy? Let's say there's an agency you guys are purchasing that has processes and systems and technology and all that sort of thing. What's your strategy for getting everything sort of under one umbrella? Or do you leave it completely autonomous?
Yes, great question. So because of our business model with our agency partners, with those partners, we let them operate the business how they want, with very few exceptions. So one of the exceptions is the management system. Everybody has to be using the management system, because we use HawkSoft for everything. Mm-hmm. It's extremely important to us. And the data that is in there is extremely important. So that has to be used and up to date. Day one is when we start that process. If there are other third-party applications, that's up to the agency partner if they want to continue on with those. So, for example, we purchased an agency in out of Phoenix, January 2nd. It was a virtual agency, came with a couple VAs, and it came with more of a virtual strategy, which is awesome. You know, if I can find more of those, I would. The agency that we moved that virtual agency into was a little more archaic in their systems and processes. And so they actually looked at what this virtual agency had and said, holy cow, this is way better than what we do. Let's adopt it. And so it's a very fluid exchange when an agency comes in. If it's coming into an existing office versus if we're bringing agency partners into that office, we make it so the major change is the management system, if that helps or answers the question. And it's mostly for accounting purposes.
Right, right. Yeah. And I guess, you know, part two to that question is, you know, sometimes with agencies, you know, my favorite thing to do is to get the P&L of an agency and go through and redline things that I can cut out. And, you know, whether it be, you know, a lot of agencies have pointless technology they use, you know, on the other end of the spectrum. So you probably have some situations like that where they're paying for, you know, maybe it's a bookkeeper, you know, $2,000 a month or something. Oh, you know, we have that and that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We do that prior to the acquisition, though. So we have a really good idea of exactly what they are prior to the acquisition. And then we know what we can bring right in. So all of the book work, all of the accounting stuff is immediately going to be taken away from the agency, which is usually one of the greatest headaches. You know, like you said, in the beginning, I don't want to do the commissions. You know what?
Right.
It's not an easy process unless you have a program for it.
What's the strategy around? So we have an agency, we have an LOI out on right now, and it's a little bit different than the last one. The last one, the owner wanted to walk away and fade off into the sunset and be around for 6 months. The one I've got an LOI out on now wants to stay on. So what's your typical deal look like? Let's say I'm an agency owner and I've got, you know, $10 million in premium, and how would you structure that? And they want to be the agency partner. And in case you guys aren't wondering, this is a consulting call that Bradley's doing. I'm ignoring all the listeners right now. I'm asking for me.
So I think as it sounds like you're currently doing, one of the ways to be successful in acquiring is to be very adaptable and moldable to the needs of the individuals that you're trying to go after, because all of the needs are different. All of their structures are different. Everything is different from one to the next. And so, you know, that's very minimal information in regards to what that could potentially look like. So for example, why is he wanting to, is he wanting to sell and just be an employee? Is he wanting to, he just wants to sell and be an employee?
Yep.
Is it because he doesn't want to deal with the headache of owning an agency anymore? Or is he just ready to slow down in life?
I think a little bit of both.
And so are you cashing him out, or is he carrying the loan?
So we offered a little more than 50% of the money up front, and then an earnout over 2 years based on revenue.
So for me, it would be, I'd want to do it more on a commission basis and not a salary basis, because, you know, when you're retired and you're collecting something,
yeah,
what's the incentive? I'm just here. My CSRs are going to maintain the book for me, and I'm just here to put out fires when they're needed.
Yeah, I think the incentive is more. So we basically said, hey, if you grow the revenue to first earnout payment at the end of the year is X. We had ranges basically. So I think his incentive would be to continue to grow that agency, which it's gonna, because of rate increases and stuff, it's gonna go up. You know what I mean? And it's an agency that's been there forever. We have no plans of closing the location or anything like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. It puts you in a little bit of a pickle. Because I mean, you're obviously trying to maximize the revenue, and it sounds like it's, you know, you're going to do just fine, especially since you have 50% cash. That'll make a big difference, but put you in a little bit of a pickle when it comes time to replace him at some point.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you're continuing on with his culture and not yours.
Okay. Okay. Hey, Jason, I'm not under an NDA. And as you can tell, I'll show you my damn taxes if you want me to. I don't care. My current agency, we have 6 locations, 14 employees, $14 million in premium, just above $2 million in revenue. We're Hawksoft, we're Agency Zoom. got a great group. But about 30 miles north of me, I've got this agency that's at about 4 million, 5 million, 6 million in premium. I don't know their exact numbers because I've never really sat down with them. They came to me. Did I tell you about this? Mm-mm. Some bitches walked in my office one day in Athens when I was in there. And the two agency owners have one employee, and they're both probably bumping 74, 75. Husband wants to sell. He's ready to get out. Wife won't sell. And the one contract they have that I don't have, and I've heard all the horror stories, is auto owners. And
they have that?
Yeah. And I even told them the day they came by, I think. I said, well,
if you left the location open, there'd probably be a strong chance they would give you that appointment.
Yeah. For just Alabama, because that's the other thing auto owners will do, yeah, is they will quickly tell you, okay, we'll give you the contract for Alabama, but you ain't getting it for no other state.
Right.
But my question is this. They keep kicking the can down the road. We'll call you when we're ready. Because you know how that's going to go. You know about how that's going to play out. How do I get them off center? Because I don't want to do this thing where I spend 4 years mm-hmm. going up and having coffee with them every day. I don't have time for that.
Let's let Jason answer, and then I'll tell you what I would do.
Skin off in their front yard and start screaming yeah. and yelling at them and threaten to beat somebody's ass.
What I would do is I would just probably just give me their address and I'll just take it off your hands so you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Jason, you're saucy. I like you.
No, you know what? That's the game. That's the game that we play. That's the game that, because I got out of the agency side, that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, but I don't play games, brother. I ain't got time for it, man. I'm jamming. I ain't got time to go to the bath. I ain't got time to go to the bathroom in the morning.
The thing is, I do
sit up there and down. Well, you know, I just wanted to come by and have some coffee, y'all.
I will agree. That is, I had somebody I was talking. It was actually an MGA I was talking to, and the guy was really old, and he just would never get to the point. And I realized really quickly, okay, this is going to have to be
right. 4 years,
45 conversations over 4 years. And I'm not even sure if I want this anymore.
Mm-mm. Hey, let me ask y'all another question.
Let me answer what I would do.
Oh God, here
you go. You know what I would do? I'd do the same thing I do to producers. So my strategy.
Murder the wife and end up on Dateline NBC.
Feel free to steal this. When I'm meeting with a producer at another agency that doesn't really want to leave their agency, I tell them, I say, look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you an offer. You just keep it in your back pocket.
I don't even know how much premium.
You just keep it in your back pocket. And what it does is it casts that little bit of doubt in their head. If they get to work and their boss is in a crappy mood and they're like, I know I have this other thing. So what I would probably do in that situation, if you roundabout know how much premium there is I would get with Carrie and get her to give you a range, and you just send them an unsolicited offer. And you just say, hey, here's your offer. Put a 6-month effective date on it or something of that nature. And here's the thing, the LOI doesn't tie you down. So if they come back and say yes, and then you go through the due diligence period, you can figure out a way to get it. It's not like buying a house where you have earnest money and that sort of thing. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, but that's how I would approach it. Like, look, let's stop footing around. Here's my offer. Let's,
Brad, you know, I mean, getting saucy over here now.
That's what I would do. I'd be like, hey, look, here's
that microphones here's around.
Here's the offer. And it puts a little bit of, it makes it real because they start imagining the money in their bank account.
Well, I'm going to say this. Okay. Well, let me just say this. When I find out they got their policies in a Scooby-Doo Trapper Keeper, I'm going to be really upset.
They probably do. What would you say to that advice, Jason?
I agree with you. In fact, I was going to ask you.
See, Jason's still wanting to buy it. He's like, yeah. I was going to ask you, what's their address and phone number?
Well, I already know. You're in a 30-mile radius from where you're at. So
I'm going to get off this call, and he's going to be like, well.
Jason's going to hack into your email.
He's going to text me 2 days from now and go, sorry. That's all it's going to say. Sorry.
I'll just be like, hey, the guy that you're dealing with doesn't have auto owners, and he's just not sure about him, but I do.
Hey, Jason, I got a news flash for you, buddy. Notice Idaho, I can be there on a plane in about 6 hours.
So is that how you would approach that, Jason?
I actually think it's a great idea. One of the things I was going to ask you is, what day would you deliver that? What day of the week? What day of the week would you deliver that that offer.
Mr. Psychology
Monday
on the old podcast here.
Monday. Yeah.
Yep. Monday or Tuesday.
Or find out what the agency owner's birthday is and send it on the birthday, and they're like, it's meant to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's the rationale behind that, Mr. Psychology?
Monday sucks.
Well, because Monday is the day that people want to quit and they don't want to be there.
I've had that Monday a lot lately.
Yeah.
Friday is the day that they have a break. And yeah, so they're like, yeah, I can deal with this. I made it through this week. I think
Bradley just had the greatest idea since the invention of the iPad. Courier that bitch to them on like their birthday. So yeah, when they get it, they're like, oh my God.
It's like there was a guy.
Stars have all aligned.
There was a guy on Twitter that was trying to get this girl to date him. And he pre-scheduled text messages to be sent to her at exactly 11:11 a.m.
Yeah, but he didn't want to be in sales.
That way she thought it was meant to be, and he really had reminders on his phone to, like, you know. But so
yeah, these people all tell me they don't want to be in sales, but when it comes to getting a girl to go to bed with them, they turn into Lee Dubois. They turn into Elon Musk and E. Dubois mixed together. That's hilarious.
It's like criminals, dude. It's like, if you would spend as much time trying to get good at sales as you think about swindling somebody, you'd be so successful. What are you guys doing? I imagine you're in a position now, you can probably do cash for a lot of these, but what do you guys do funding wise? Do you guys do owner notes or,
you know, the
creative financing,
like,
or do you work
going
with
up
bank?
With one of these, like, the Levitt Group or whatever, and then you turn into vice president of business development. Mm-hmm. Go out and find the acquisition or merger, use their money, and then you get 10%.
That's
of the
essentially
agency.
What Jason's doing, but the other way around.
I know, I didn't want to
with
call
his
him
agency
out by
partners,
name,
right? I mean, you're sending them out to find acquisitions and that sort of thing. But what are you guys doing around that?
Yes. So two questions there. One is, we typically do not do cash purchases. If we can do owner carries, it's by far the preference. I would rather do an owner carry. And we have, like, for us, we have a perfect track record for all of our owner carries.
What's an owner carry? Is it owner finance?
Owner's carrying the note.
Owner finance. Yeah. So what we typically do is a 10-year owner finance. And it's, you know, again, having a
percentage of renewals, basically.
No, we don't do a percentage. We typically just do a fixed factor, and then it's on us.
That helps them with their taxes, right?
Big time, big time.
If you're wiring somebody X number of dollars for an acquisition, guess what Uncle Sam's going to do? Bring it on, brother.
Yeah. And one of the number one concerns, actually probably the number one concern that we hear, is if they do an owner carry or an owner finance, the number one concern is, I don't want to come back into the agency. I don't want to have to come back.
Right.
For us, because we have such a strong company and a perfect track record, like, we'll tell them, you could call any of our past acquisitions and get a history. We have no problems. We're an open book. But for us, the way that we quell that concern is the corporate takes on that responsibility. They know that an agency partner is coming in, and they know that the agency partner is responsible for the running of the business. But the corporation's actually paying the note. The corporation's backing the note. So regardless of if that partner runs it into the ground, we still have the ability to pay it.
So are you protecting your downside at all with that, if a certain percentage of business falls off or that sort of thing? Or is it just simply a straight owner note as if you did it with the bank?
Straight owner note as if we did it with the bank. And it really helps. Like, if you ever sell an agency, you don't want to go down that path of watching your renewals constantly to figure out what that's, it's a pain in the rear. And not saying it's not worth it, because it is, but when we go and we make this approach, it gives them a ton of comfort and it helps it happen easier.
I'll tell you what we're doing. So the first two I did were both, I guess you could say, owner notes, but they were based on a percentage of renewals. So it was like, hey, whatever renews in January, you're going to get 33% of, or something of that nature. This last one, we used a bank. I've got another one now. I don't have an LOI out on yet, but I'm negotiating. And it's a small agency. It's an agency owner. You know, there's a lot of agency owners that start an agency that really should be a number two or number three at an agency, but they never were in a situation where they had a boss that could help plant them and have them grow. And so it was like, oh, it's easier to do it on my own.
Or,
and
they or maybe they were crooked as a snake and they don't need to be with your agents. And they, I digress.
And they got into it and realized, hey, I would rather just sell. I don't want to be in charge of operations and managing people and carrier contracts and technology and that sort of thing and accounting. And so what we're doing with this particular one, and we're open to more of these, is, hey, we have operations down. We have processes down. We have technology down. We will buy into your agency for a dollar. You go to work for us. We put a comp plan together, and then you get a percentage of the upside.
Hmm.
And to some people, they're like, yeah, that works. That's good. And we've got one now that we're talking to about that.
Jason, I have a question. Can I ask a
question? One second. Question? I think Jason was going to say something.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was... The two mergers that we just did on January 2nd were somewhat similar to that.
One of my questions to you was going to be earlier. I wrote this down. What is the difference between a merger and an acquisition? And I think Bradley just answered that. If you're doing what you're talking about, that would be a merger, right? An acquisition is when you actually buy an agency.
Well,
yes or no?
I think the two can be the same thing, but traditionally a merger is, hey, these two firms are merging. And then an acquisition is, hey, this company's buying this one. For me, with this one we just did, even though it was an acquisition, we are positioning it as a merger to the clients because I think they look at that a little less.
Did you ever do a merger knowing that what a control freak you are?
Mm-mm.
Bradley, you've got to expand your horizons.
The other thing,
be more
the other
open
thing,
to new ideas.
The other thing Kenneth and I are looking at is, hey, we invest in your agency for a dollar. You get all of our carriers. You get all of our resources. I don't want penny of equity in what you have now. We only get a percentage of what we grow it to. So if we come in and shit the bed, you still have your agency.
So we've kind of down the similar path with the two mergers that we just recently did. They maintain. So you've got to kind of have to be careful how you structure it for the carrier side, because if you're basically just giving them access, then you become an access company, and carriers don't look at that the same way as they do as an actual merger, because what you're quasi mergering, but you're just having them pay you for access.
Mm-hmm.
And so you probably will have some carrier issues because they'll want to see contracts of what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
What we just went through, essentially the two mergers, they turned their entire books over to us, but they have the ability to walk away in the first 2 years.
Mm.
So
and take it back
and take their book back.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were totally, I mean, this was our first attempt at a merger like this. And we wanted to make sure there was no fear for them. They're smaller. They needed carriers. Yeah. They needed stability. They needed strength behind, some of those carriers. You know, we've got a couple carriers that we have well over $10 million in, and talk about, the contingency percentages that it just takes them to a completely different level. So for them, it makes sense. Now, it does cost them, we do take a percentage, but we also manage the back end of what they do. So there's definitely a mutual benefit there.
For sure. And my thing, the one that we're talking to about this is, I'm like, hey, look, this agency is probably $700,000 in premium. So I'm like, okay, your expenses at $700,000 in premium are probably going to be around 40 or 50%. Let's say it's 50. You're still going to definitely make the same money that you're making now net, probably more with all the resources.
Yeah, especially if you're not taking anything of what they currently have.
Right.
So it's going to cost you with the hope that they're going to grow.
Right. And what's the valuation on a 70,000 revenue agency? It's got to be one or even less, right? So if you were to go to sell, you're coming out ahead going the other way than just flat out selling the agency.
I think that it makes a big difference what kind of an agency it is. So for example, if it's a virtual agency, I will pay probably two times all day for that. If it's virtual and we can just absorb it in.
Right.
Because there's no extra cost associated with it. It's an easy play. If they want to stay and you've got all the additional overhead costs because you have to maintain an initial office, then the value of it goes down significantly because they have the overhead of a, you know, of a large office, you know,
right,
for the most part, outside of payroll. So you really want to know what you're getting and what that's going to look like. The other question, if you're going to do something like that, you want to make sure that they are running the same systems that you're running.
Mm-hmm.
Because if not, your accountant, whoever's managing your books, is going to love you.
So the walk away 2 year period, I'm assuming any business that's written during that 2 years, if they choose to walk away, stays with you.
Oh, it'll stay with them.
Oh, really? Interesting. Okay.
Yep.
Getting greedy, Bradley.
So they're really, them and you are really betting on you showing them in that 2 years that you can add value to that agency.
100%. And we know that we can, or we know that we already have. And I already know, I mean, for example, one guy that I speak to often, he's like, I'm not leaving. This is so helpful. I mean, there's a network of people. There's a network of knowledge that's at their fingertips within our chat.
Mm-hmm.
There's the systems that they didn't have before. There's the accounting aspect that they didn't have. There's the incentives that we get from the carriers because of our size that they never got and never knew existed.
Mm-hmm.
There's the contingency levels that they wouldn't achieve on their own. There's too much benefit to be a part of a larger organization and give up a small amount than just to maintain yourself and being a smaller agency.
Bradley has smoke coming out of his ears right now. He's thinking so hard.
But it's so important in these creative situations too, that as the acquiring party, not to outkick your coverage too. You know, a good example is not to give too sweet of a deal that it hurts you on the back end too. A good example is I saw somebody in a Facebook group the other day asked the question, hey, I'm looking at bringing on my first producer. And somebody said, oh, you've got to pay them 80% of the revenue they bring in. And I'm like, well, that sounds all great when you're starting from zero. Hey, I'm willing to pay 80%. But what happens when you go to sell and 80% of your revenue is going out the back door? You know what I mean? It's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube if you've promised one thing. And it's a part of our deal with this model is really making sure we get it equally right for both parties, because I don't want to give my heart and resources and everything to somebody and then, you know, 10 years down the road, I found out it's not a great solution.
Yeah.
Question.
Hey, Scott, go for it. Your turn.
And then I got to go. You talked about owner carry, owner financing, 10-year note. What do you do with older people that are in their 70s that, quite frankly, may not be around for 10 years? Do you just shorten the duration of the loan, or how do you – Or do you go the other route where give them a check, because quite frankly, they're just not going to be around for that duration more than likely.
It's really, really important to listen.
Yeah.
I can't stress that enough. You really have to, sometimes they don't exactly know what they want,
yeah,
but they'll give you a lot of cues and a lot of information, and you help them understand what they may want or what they need, and you present them with multiple ideas that may work for their structure, and that's a win-win situation. So if they know that they're not going to be around for 10 years, you know, just health-wise or whatever that might be, figure out what they want.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to do it on a shorter basis, or if they just want the cash, you know, go get a loan from the bank and make it happen.
Right.
But yeah, listening is probably the most underrated skill when it comes to acquisitions.
Jason, I'm going to say this, brother. It's been one of my most favorite podcasts I think we've ever done.
Wow.
Because very rarely do I see Bradley get this excited. And his input today has been incredible.
It's in my wheelhouse, man.
That's right. In his wheelhouse. Hey, guys, listen. Jason, I'm going to shut this thing down. You have been listening to the Jason and Bradley Insurance Mergers and Acquisitions podcast. Thank you so much to each and every one of you for listening today. We love each and every one of you. As I end every podcast, rewards come from action, not discussion. Get your ass out from behind that desk today. Go out into the world. Go out into the big, bad world and create relationships. Go out and become the mayor of your village. Go, if you're into the mergers and acquisitions, or you think you might be, or maybe later on down the road, this was a incredibly insightful look behind the curtain. And I'm going to tell you where this podcast shined today was listening to the questions that Jason and how thoughtful he was in the questions that he's asked. He's been doing this a long time, and he's able to identify certain things by asking certain questions that somebody like myself, who has the brain of a small squirrel, would not be able to identify or think about when I was talking to somebody relative to a merger or acquisition. Tremendous wealth of information there. And it was enjoyable for me just to, my favorite part of today was sitting here and shutting my stupid mouth and listening to he and Bradley kind of go back and forth as he's asking Bradley question after question after question. Because that's what you got to do in these situations, is figure out, he said it at the very end, figure out what these people want. And maybe in some cases helping them with what they need, right, Jason? Like what?
And some of them probably don't even know what they want.
And some of them don't even know what they want. But by asking, but by being a great attorney, so to speak, and asking the right questions, you kind of help them figure that out. Mm-hmm. So very insightful behind the curtain look. Again, guys, if you're not subscribed, go to the Jason and Bradley Insurance Mergers and Acquisitions podcast.
Might not be a bad idea.
They can help you. I knew you would say that. That's why I said it. Probably start that podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Insurance Guys podcast. If you need to know more about me or you need to get in touch with Scott, you can always reach me at theinsuranceguyonline.com or email me at scott@iprotectinsurance.com. And if you need to get in touch with Mr. Bradley Flowers, go to portalinsurance.com or email him at bradley@portalinsurance.com. Guys, we love you. We thank you so much for listening to our show and being a part of our family. And we look forward to seeing you again next week on the next episode of the Insurance Guys podcast. Take care.